Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
For the last 2 weeks, we have been reflecting on 2020 from a variety of perspectives. For example, yesterday, we did the year in sports. Well, today, we are going to take probably my favorite news question of the year and ask it about the year. How big of a deal is it? That's right. Today, we are going to attempt to place 2020 in the arc of history, and I cannot wait to hear from our two guests. We have David Shribman, executive editor emeritus of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and for 10 years, the Washington bureau chief of the Boston Globe. And we have Professor Kelly Carter-Jackson, assistant professor of Africana Studies at Wellesley College. David and Kelly, welcome back to the show to both of you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, it's so great to have you. So I think we should start by going big or going home. So I'm just going to ask you straight up, how big of a deal is 2020 in the arc of history? Are we talking one of the top 20 most important years, top five, not actually even on the list? Kelly, what do you think?
I don't think it's even on the list. You know, when I think of big moments, you think of like, certainly the Spanish flu or the Great Depression or, you know, racial protests of 1968. But we haven't had all of that come together at the same exact time, all in the same year. And so for me, I know this word is like so overused, but unprecedented really is sort of what we've been experiencing this entire year.
So when you say not on the list, I think you mean it's kind of on a list of its own. Is that what you mean?
Exactly, exactly. I don't think there's anything that we could compare 2020 to. I think there's certain aspects of it that we've seen. I just don't think we've seen all of those aspects all at once clustered together in the way that we have with 2020.
David, do you agree with that?
Well, it's hard to disagree with that. And I would say only three others come close. 1776, for the reasons we know, surely in Boston, 1861, the beginning of the Civil War, and 1941, the beginning for America, at least, of World War II. But as Professor Carter-Jackson says, we have a confluence of immense events for 2020. Like 1941, we did have Ted Williams' great season and Joe DiMaggio's great season. 1776 speaks for itself, but I think this is in a class by itself, and I think we'd all three of us agree we'd just as soon not have lived through another competitor.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, in listening to the two of you, okay, I gotta be honest, I thought you were gonna say it was a big deal. I wasn't expecting you to say that it was that big a deal, and I honestly don't know whether I should feel proud to have lived through it or sick to my stomach.
Well, here's the thing. If this had happened 3 years earlier or 5 years earlier, I think Professor Carter-Jackson and I would probably agree it didn't rank up there in the top three or four. Mm-hmm. But you had a presidential election. You had George Floyd. You had all sorts of things. And you had the confluence of a pandemic and technology. Now, had this happened in 1995, he couldn't have conducted college classes by Zoom because, well, Zoom was a verb then, not a noun. And so I think so many things converged this year that I think the Professor Carter-Jackson and I are voting 2-0 on this.
Yeah, I think so. I can agree. I mean, the election, how could I forget the election? Like, the election was all consuming in the middle of this. And it's so funny. Just a few weeks ago, I was telling my husband, like, I feel like I had nothing to watch on TV. And it was because the election was over. And I felt like so much of the past 4 years really had been the election. And so this is the first time I feel like politically things have somewhat slowed down a bit. But again, we're about to experience, you know, the inauguration in another few weeks. And so it will be another, you know, 4 years of a new presidency to sort of, you know, write down for the record books. But definitely, I don't think that we will ever experience something like this again.
Well, let's also agree that, you know, somebody once said that humankind's happiest days are written on the blank pages of history. It wouldn't be so bad for our lives to feel a little empty without the president, without the tweets. It wouldn't be so bad.
So I do want to take each of the pieces, because both of you have listed a bunch of stuff here. But before we do, I do want to ask one more question about the interaction of those pieces, right? So I've kind of been running through the year in my head for lots of reasons the last couple of weeks. We go all the way back to, we thought we might go to war at the beginning of 2020. Then the Senate voted not to convict the president on impeachment. We had the election. We had the pandemic. We had our great racial reckoning. Would any one or two of these have been enough to make this really historically one heck of a year? Or is it the fact that they were a confluence and they depended on each other to happen that makes this year so historically remarkable? Kelly, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, I do think I don't think we pay attention to George Floyd without the pandemic, because George Floyd is not the first. You know, we saw a similar death with Eric Garner and with so many others, Mike Brown, and it did not garner the same kind of national and international and prolonged attention that we saw this past summer. And I think that's because the pandemic forced us to stop and there was nothing much else to look at. And this was something that was quite grim for us to witness, because, you know, the footage is all there for you to see, 8 minutes and 46 seconds. So, yeah, I do think that it was dependent upon one another. I think I can't imagine what the experience of George Floyd would have looked like had it not been for the pandemic.
David, is that your take as well, that that was the interplay between all of these massive events that made the year, or would one or two of them alone have been enough to make this an historically remarkable year?
Well, George Floyd's death would have been unnecessary and inexcusable any year, but it was particularly poignant when Donald Trump was president. The pandemic would have been a big deal. I mean, immense numbers of deaths, tragedy after tragedy. But it was even greater because of who was president and how he handled it. You know, I mentioned 1776 earlier. Somebody wrote a musical about 1776. If you wrote a musical about 2020, it would be a dirge. And the best thing we can say for the year is that it was the year 2020. And if we look at it with 2020 hindsight, we're going to regard it as a year of tragedy.
So I want to now
dive
into it.
Any year that leadership matters.
So say some more about that, Kelly.
Well, going back to what was said, I think leadership really matters. How you handle a crisis, how you handle these conflicts. A lot of the deaths that we saw came from, you know, this inability to act swiftly, to act clearly, to act across the board, collectively, to have a national federal response, I think could have saved a lot of lives, especially if we had acted much sooner. I don't think you can underestimate not just national leadership, but local leadership, how people have experienced the pandemic in small towns like Waterloo, Idaho, versus how they've experienced pandemics in a place like New York City. All of that matters.
Let me just a quick follow-up question there. I apologize for my ignorance, Kelly, but why pick Waterloo? Is there something specific there that I'm
Waterloo
missing?
I think because one of my good friends is the public health director there, but also because
got it.
They had the largest outbreak at the Tyson plant there. And I don't think we realize how much the Tyson plant was a microcosm of what was to happen to the rest of the country. The fact that they were working in close quarters, the fact that they had not prepared their employees or had prepared masks for their employees, and, you know, that there are so many people who lost their lives in a relatively small town with this one plant that's responsible for feeding all of America. But it's these small towns that are working hard as essential workers to feed America that are also sort of representative of how we could handle a response like this so much better at larger levels and local levels and state levels.
And
just so I know,
it.
Was
I
it Iowa or Idaho, Kelly? I'm
Iowa,
so sorry.
Iowa, Waterloo,
thanks.
Iowa.
Okay, David, go ahead.
Interesting that it was called a Waterloo, right? But we began the year deploring and worrying about the wage gap, and we end the year seeing that the class gap really played itself out with this disease, which is a kind of tragedy upon tragedy. And I would add one other thing. The last three presidents, save this one, were pastors in larger regard. President Clinton had played a pastoral role. President Bush, after 9/11, was the nation's pastor. Surely Obama played a pastoral role, particularly at the South Carolina funeral. Mm-hmm. This president abjured the pastoral role. It was a huge break from what had been, let's see, a 24-year pattern of presidents playing a pastoral role. And I think that was significant, and I think that changed the tone of this whole thing.
So I want to play two pieces of sound for the two of you that I think get to the point you're making, David, and also get to some stuff that you wrote about earlier this year, Kelly. So I'm going to start with actually some sound from Joe Biden accepting the presidential nomination and adopting, David, what I think one might say is a more pastoral tone. Here he is.
I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness. It's time for us, for we the people, to come together. And make no mistake, united we can and will overcome this season of darkness in America.
So there's Biden accepting the nomination and using a kind of rhetoric that we most markedly have not heard from President Donald Trump. I want to play alongside that a cut of actually L.A. Clippers coach and former Boston Celtics coach Doc Rivers, who gave an emotional response to the NBA players' decision to boycott games and talked about the narrative portrayed specifically at the Republican National Convention around a focus on fear and rioting with the protests. He said that that focus ignored the roots of the problem. Here he is.
We're the ones that were denied to live in certain communities. We've been hung. We've been shot. And all you do is keep hearing about fear. It's amazing to me why we keep loving this country and this country does not love us back.
So, Kelly, we talked with you earlier in the year about some writing you did on the double standard of the American riot. Can you just reflect on those two cuts for a minute? And then, David, I'm going to come back to you, too. Kelly.
I mean, that Doc Rivers quote gets me every time. And it's because it's nonsensical when we think about how racial violence has operated in this country. It has primarily flowed in one direction, that black people are always the majority of the victims when it comes to racial violence. You know, we don't hear about black people blowing up churches or going into white churches and shooting white people during a prayer meeting. We don't hear about four little girls that are killed in a church bombing by a black man. We don't even hear about mass shootings taking place by black people in a Walmart intent to kill white people. Like, this violence only majoritarily operates in one direction, and that is against people of color and black people in particular. And so I think we've just not had a very honest conversation about the hypocrisy that is fueling the fear that people have, this irrational fear that people have. And, you know, I'm constantly asking the question as well, you know, who should be afraid of whom when we think about the police and when we think about these protests in which unarmed protesters are like matched up against armies. This is not a fair fight. Visually, it's not a fair fight, but physically, it's certainly not a fair fight. And I think these are things that we're going to have to grapple with going forward, certainly if we want to see change.
And David, we have grappled with our rhetoric around our observations of peaceful protests. There has been violence and riots as well. And the role, and you raised this earlier, that our leadership plays in how we relate to each other, whether we're dialed up, who thinks they have the upper hand. That's not a very satisfying way to describe it, but it's the best I've got right now. Reflect on that and what that means for 2021.
Well, I think what Professor Carter Jackson said is true through every syllable of what she had to say. Presidents Obama and President Clinton and really George W. Bush understood this. But the last white leader who actually expressed this was Robert Kennedy the night that Martin Luther King was killed, when he reflected in Indianapolis at the airport that his brother had also been killed by a white man. And we've had a racial reckoning here, but it's only been skin deep, and it hasn't been to the depth that we've been talking about today, and we still need that. And it can only break every American's heart to hear that Doc Rivers sing, and every time you hear it, your heart breaks even more.
Hmm. Kelly, in our last minute, if you teach mm-hmm. about this year one day, what's the theme of the class?
Oh, resistance and resilience. I think those are the two biggest things that we've seen this year. Americans fight against a pandemic, but also fight back and work together collectively. I hope those are things that we can take away, resistance and resilience.
And David, if you wrote a book, what would the theme of the book or the title of the book be?
I would go back to the last sentence of President Johnson's voting rights speech in 1966, or it might have been 65, or it could have been from the 64 speech, in which he said, "We shall overcome, and Americans, we must overcome these problems."
Well, I got to tell you, that was a really satisfying conversation for me, and I learned so much from the both of you. David Shribman, executive editor emeritus of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and former Washington bureau chief of the Boston Globe, as well as Professor Kelly Carter-Jackson, assistant professor of Africana Studies at Wellesley College. Thanks so much to both of you.
Well, thank you, too.
Thank you.